Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our guest is Sina Kahan, co-founder of The Voice Course, and we're going to talk about voice UX today. This episode is brought to you by UserList, a lifecycle messaging tool for SaaS companies. It's perfect for sending smart onboarding campaigns or any other behavior-based communication. We have everything you need to get started quickly and painlessly. Developer-friendly API, campaign templates, and hands-on support from the founders. Try UserList free at userlist.com. Hi, Sina.
Hello.
We are very excited to have you on board. This is an exciting topic.
Thank you very much for having me. You're doing some great work in the UI space and product management space, so I'm happy to be a part of it.
Fantastic. Before we get started, can you tell us a bit more when you got started, what's your professional background, and how you ended up in voice UX?
Absolutely. So I actually came from a totally different world, and that's the world of biomedical sciences. So I graduated around 10 years ago as a biomedical scientist, joined a medical technology company, really started my career in sales, developed into marketing, product management, and then corporate innovation. And one of the innovation projects about four or five years ago that I was working on was really trying to see how can we improve the user experience in the surgical operating room for surgeons as well as for nurses. And we concluded that given the fact that it's, you know, an operating room is a sterile setting where you can't really touch everything for infection control risks, a voice user interface would be ideal in interacting with the devices or interacting with the different objects that may exist within an operating room. And that's really when voice started to show up as this new feature or this new interface of the human-computer interaction. And around the same time, I was sponsored to do my MBA at Imperial College London. And a lot of the focus of that MBA course was really learning about emerging technologies and how the future face of branding is really going to evolve in the future. And this is what one thing that really stuck out was the fact that voice is such an important emerging technology for almost every industry. And that's that message that I got really forced me to create a consulting group called VACE, which was essentially a group of MBA students working in different industries. And we would go out, offer thought leadership, and consult brands in a variety of industries on how voice really can improve a lot of the user experiences that are out there. And consulting is very limited in its lifespan. So we decided to create our first major product, which is the voicecourse.co. And that's essentially an opportunity and an educational system where it allows designers, strategists, digital transformation experts, innovators, marketing experts to really upskill and learn more about this world of voice, conversational AI, and how it is that they can take advantage of this exciting space while bringing all of their important expertise from other UI and UX fields into it. So, and here we are today.
Tell us a bit more. What does your typical consulting gig look like? You maybe call some names, maybe don't. What do you typically do when somebody asks you to come in? Do you just do the top level strategy or do you follow the whole implementation cycle?
Yeah, so it's a great question because it really varies. It very much depends on the objectives of the company. Some companies would call us in to basically provide thought leadership, to provide some almost a selling pitch of why voice is a fundamental element of their digital strategy as a whole. And, you know, the likes of BBC, Lego, O2, Rain Agency out in America, a lot of agencies in general who were really getting new to this voice world wanted to learn more about it, but there weren't many experts in the field. And because we started this at such an early age of the industry, we almost became overnight experts because no one else was really learning about it. So on the one side, it would be very much thought leadership. On the other side, it's going in with a defined budget and then trying to basically map out the existing consumer journey and seeing what are the different digital touch points that a consumer has with this brand's product or service, whether it's mobile, whether it's web, whether it's in-store. And then we try to see, okay, in each of those different stages of the journey, how would voice provide not only a less friction-heavy experience, but actually a more delightful and pleasurable experience? Because something that's really special about voice is that it's not about just making things easier, it's making things more pleasurable because of the emotional triggers that a voice can provide to the listener. So it really varies depending on the project, but it's quite a wide spectrum.
For some reason, please pardon my reference to that famous YouTube video about two people trying to use a voice-operated elevator and saying 11. That brings up some emotions. Have you watched that one?
I have, and there's actually way worse. And I don't know if you remember Clippy, the little thing we had on Microsoft Word where it was like the shape of a little clip, which would give you advice when you don't want advice, or it would give you tips on how to edit your document when you've never asked for it, and it would smile at you when you're angry. That very much reminds me of those types of voice-activated elevators or voice-activated anything that comes with low emotional intelligence. So yeah, I know the feeling.
So it's not always that kind of emotion that we wanted to trigger that are actually triggered.
Yes, exactly. I think voice right now is at a very IQ-heavy stage where it's got a lot of intelligence with regards to knowledge, but it doesn't have a lot of emotional intelligence about speaking at the right time in the right tone based on what the user wants at that time. So yeah, there's a lot to improve on, that's for sure.
We had an episode here at UI Breakfast a few years ago with Jonathan Stark about conversational UX, but I think we barely scratched the surface there. So could you bring us to speed with the terms? There is voice UX, there is conversational UX, and there is also voice recognition as the whole, you know, area of technology. How do they all relate to each other?
Yeah, it's a very important question, because when you don't have working definitions and when you don't have distinctions and nuance, people can get very confused, especially if they're trying to enter the industry. So conversational UX is essentially a user experience that its core feature is the fact that there's a conversation going on. It could be via text, like a chatbot, or it could be via voice, like a smart speaker. So that's like the umbrella term, if you like, for conversational experiences. So you've got top level conversational UX, then there's two branches where you've got chatbot UX or you've got voice UX. And chatbot UX, as I said, it's more text-based, whereas the voice UX is actually to do with voices. So you'd have not only a voice inputting a question, but also a voice being, an answer being outputted via voice again from the smart speaker or whatever device it is that you're using. And voice recognition is an element of voice UX. Because obviously, if I'm asking a question to a smart speaker, that smart speaker needs to have voice recognition to recognize what I'm saying. So if you like, voice recognition is a branch off of voice UX. And the umbrella that covers both chatbot UX and voice UX is conversational UX.
Thank you so much for clarifying. Now it makes a bit more sense to us mere mortals. So when somebody who's listening to us wants to, you know, branch out a new career in this sphere, do you think that they need to be specifically focusing on voice UX or chatbox UX, or do you think they're kind of intertwined and they could be both?
Again, great question. And I think it's important to start with thinking about what it is that would want them even to enter this kind of industry. And the thing that really triggered me and got me interested is the fact that at the end of the day, smart speakers in particular, so if we're talking about voice UX here, it's the fastest adopted technology in history. So it received 50% adoption in the US, for example, in 5 years relative to smartphone, TV, internet, computer, radio. So it's something that's been adopted to such an extent that it almost speaks for itself of what kind of industry it is for us to really bring our UI, UX strategy, design skills into. But then when you get to that stage, you also realize that chatbots are becoming popular. And of course, there are definitely principles that are shared across chatbot and voice platforms. But at the end of the day, the difference is the same difference that you will notice holding your phone. There's a certain personality, there's a certain type of conversation you'll have when you're texting your friends versus when you're speaking with your friends. And we know how often we say, oh, you know, my message got lost in the text, or, oh, you misunderstood what I meant because of the way I texted you. Those are the things, or the problems, if you like, that really arise through text-based communications. Whereas with voice, you can tell a lot of things about the context or the meaning of what the person is trying to get across to you when you're hearing the actual voice being used. So what I'm really saying is that for those who are interested in this space, first of all, you know, there are courses out there, which I'm sure we'll touch upon, that touch on conversation, on voice, on a variety of different elements within the industry. But conversational AI is the kind of thing that people need to work towards, which is, again, as I said, this conversational way of interacting with our devices and technology. And then from those principles, you can then tailor it out to voice UX or chatbot UX. So it's not mutually exclusive. And there are principles that are shared across both fields. For me, voice UX is where I see my focus, because at the end of the day, that's where I believe you can provide the most emotional intelligence. But definitely, it's not that you become, you know, just a voice UX expert or a chatbot expert. I think having that conversational basis, putting yourself under that conversational umbrella, will make you well equipped for both spaces within this larger space.
Conversational UX or conversational AI? Because we see AI often added as sort of a buzzword, and like, I'm personally never sure what exactly it means in the global scale of things, where exactly AI is applied in that sphere.
Yeah, so AI, to reduce it down, because everyone loves using the term, as you said, it's like the new buzzword after innovation. But AI is essentially making computers more like humans, or better versions of humans. And what conversational AI is, it's the umbrella term above conversational UX. So if you think of a tree where you've got, you know, the root of it is AI, then you've got a major branch, which is conversational AI. Then you've got branches coming off of that conversational AI branch, such as conversational UX. And then branches coming off of conversational UX, which is voice UX and chatbot UX. That's really, you know, it's all part of the family. And the way that AI comes into these experiences is the fact that when I'm saying something, you know, I could say, what's the weather like in Ireland? Right. But it could be Ireland, or it could be an island, or it could be Republic of Ireland, or it could be Northern Ireland. So the AI comes in to take your speech and determine the intent. So what is the intent of the question you're asking? And that's where the brain works, if you like, to determine what is the intent and then process that information and bring back to you the correct answer. Machine learning is a fundamental part of conversational experiences, especially conversational experiences where the user would be interacting with the voice application or the chatbot again and again and again. Why? Because you need the AI to glean the observational data each time the user uses the product, so that the next time you use it, you don't start from scratch. There's this familiarity that's building as you go from one conversation to another. And you can only really do that with machine learning and AI. So conversational AI is really just the conversational elements of an AI entity. And under that come all of the different terms that we've been discussing.
That makes so much sense. Thanks for clarifying. That was almost a revelation for me as per why we're using that term there. Can you call out some product examples that are really killing it and what format they come in? Like, we can see Siri as part of the iOS and Apple kind of operating systems and a few others and home devices, but other like voice operated apps or some other kinds of software. Like, what's the format?
Yeah, again, really, really important, because we have to remember voice technology, this voice space, is not necessarily exclusively about voice applications. Voice applications are one way of creating a voice experience, but there's also voice integration, where you are using voice as another way of pressing a button. So instead of pressing a button, you're asking for something to be done. So it's much more transactional as opposed to conversational. So the series of the world, I mean, we have disastrous experiences with them. I do anyway. And it's improving, but it's not where the future of conversational AI is going to lay. And the killer app mentality is, I think, is missing the point of a voice experience, because we think of a mobile app as it has something that it wants to do, and you are using that mobile application and getting an output. And an objective is there to be reached. But when we're talking about voice as a navigation tool, when we're talking about voice as replacing a button, there's no killer concept there. It's just the fact that it's, you know, it's easier to reach the same objective. It's easier to book a flight, let's say, or to search for a flight instead of going through all the different options of opening your phone, unlocking it, going to the app, searching the app, where you're going, where you're coming from, what day you're traveling, putting that all in, waiting for the results to come back. That's about a 10, 11 step process. Whereas if a mobile application had a voice integration element to it, you would just say, I'm looking for a flight to Los Angeles on the 21st of March. And then that's, you know, in two steps relative to 11 steps, you get the same answer. So there's that side where it's just voice being used as a way of getting to your answer quicker. But then there are apps out there, as you've said, where they're on these smart speakers, such as Google Assistant or Amazon Alexa. Siri doesn't have applications because they haven't opened it up to brands and developers to develop their own loan applications on them. But with Google and Amazon, you have, for example, the H&M Gift Finder, which for me is one of the best voice applications out there. It's on Google Assistant, and it really utilizes something that it's very important for UI designers and product managers listening to remember, which is that voice is part of a multimodal experience, which means that it's not here to replace touch. It's not here to replace mobile apps or websites. It's there to augment those experiences or to be used as a different mode of interaction at a different time. So for example, the H&M Gift Finder, it's a voice application on the Google Assistant device at home that you have, a smart speaker, or on the phone. But the reason why I mentioned multimodal is because on the Google Assistant app on the phone, when you turn on this H&M Gift Finder, it is utilizing different modes of interaction. You've got touch, you've got image, so you've got pictures of, well, to sum it up, you're basically looking for a gift to buy for somebody. And it will go through questions of, you know, what room are you looking for this gift to be put into? What colors do you like? So it's almost taking the assistant that might be in the H&M home store in your high street, but it's bringing it to you in your phone. And you've got images in front of you. You can slide things. You can go onto websites. But you're controlling all of this via your voice. And that's where I think the real attraction is for UI designers that are taking all of the skills they've learned from their visual work and augmenting those experiences by adding an element of voice to them. Another one is ASOS. Again, a really good example of a shopping experience where you don't just have to touch and slide. You can actually interact with your voice. And then one of my favorite ones are the meditation applications. But again, it's really important to distinguish between transactional applications such as, hey, turn on my light, and conversational applications such as the H&M Gift Finder, where it will go through a series of questions. It's more conversational, and then get you the answer you're looking for. So I would say it's less of a killer app. It's more of a, how does this experience, voice experience or voice first experience, improve existing experiences out there, such as a mobile application or a website?
That's exactly what I meant by killer apps. And like, as designers, we know that killer experience most often is something that just gets the job done in the most appropriate way. So that's exactly what you described in those examples.
Perfect.
We're going to link to those. One question as a designer, let's say there is an existing app, I don't know, ASOS shopping app on iPhone, and you come in as a voice UX specialist, and then you integrate voice controls in the app to augment their experience. How does it reflect on the screen? Because what comes to mind is this like oscillating kind of empty screen that we see when we think of Siri or Google, you know, search button in the middle of the blank screen. So how does it tie into an existing app which already has some graphic UI in it?
Yeah, so one thing that we're seeing is, you know, voice being used as a navigation tool around a mobile application. So if you're going on a particular app right now, and let's say a banking app, and you want to see when it was that you transferred money or received money from a certain person or company, again, it's like a 6-7 step process that you have to do that. Right now, you could have the same visual experience or visual elements that you would have on a mobile application, but instead you could either show the fact that there's a voice being activated and a voice is speaking through, there are symbols. So you can have circles, squares. Some applications like to use triangles. So there's even a visual cue for the fact that there is a voice element to this interface. Even if you go on the Amazon app, Amazon Prime application, where you want to book, where you want to order stuff from your phone, you'll have that little voice, that microphone button in the corner. And what that does is it basically allows you to navigate what you want to what you want without you having to go through and clicking page by page by page. So instead of me having to navigate through, you know, my savings account or my current account and then go to the write in the correct month, you know, search for the correct person, go through all of them and see the person I'm looking for, I could literally just say to the mobile application, when did I send Stephen some money in February? And it would automatically give that answer to me. So the integration of a mobile app is, I think, a very exciting space for designers that have worked on mobile applications, because they're not leaving behind all of their visual experience and jumping into an experience that really has no pixel real estate. It's just in the air and it's abstract. So that's where I think it's a great place for visual designers to really jump into.
Which leads to our next question, which is, what are the tools of the trade? Let's say classic UX designers, UI designers, their deliverable is a wireframe or something in Figma, the actual screen. So what are the deliverables that you ship as a voice UX designer?
Yeah, so there's quite a few tools out there. There's BotMock, Bot Society, and here what you could do, and of course Excel, which I'll go into a bit later. But really, it's prototyping conversations. It's, imagine the kind of text conversation you're having with a friend, where you've got, you know, your name and then your friend's name. So what you're doing is you're trying to design how does the conversation flow, and you've got these applications out there, the software out there that will allow you to basically create that conversational flow diagram in a much more alluring way with nice color, et cetera, et cetera. So that when you pass it on to the developer, they know what's required. However, we actually use, and a lot of people in the industry use Excel, because from there you can really just have the question and the different answers you think you're going to get. And as a designer, you have to think, what are the answers that are likely to be given to this question? Because the only way the next question will flow, or the only way the answer will be recognized, is if that answer was inputted as a possible answer to your initial question, if you see what I'm saying. So that's why I always say, you know, someone who wants to become a chatbot or voice designer, so generally a conversational designer, any experience in sales, any experience as a teacher, any experience where you've had to converse with someone and the strength of your role has been to have some, you know, emotionally intelligent conversations, you're best positioned for this kind of industry. So Excel is a great one. You put out all of those different diagrams. And then from the diagrams, really, you see these voice experiences develop. So the ones I recommend are Excel, but then obviously you've got BotMock, Bot Society, which we use as well. And then Adobe XD has a fantastic setup for voice experiences that are on visual platforms, such as a mobile application on Alexa Show, which is the Alexa smart speaker, which has a screen, or the Google Home Hub, which is the Google Assistant that has a screen. And Adobe XD really allows designers to create a flow within Adobe XD, whereby you have voice and visual integrated as one.
What are the resources out there where professionals of this industry sort of hang out? Like, where does the wisdom, collective wisdom, gets published, and where can our listeners head over to learn more?
Yeah, so I would recommend, there's an event almost every month within the conversational AI space. The main one is it's called the Voice Summit by Modev, M-O-D-E-V. And the first year, I've gone there and spoken there the last 2 years where it really began. It's in New York, and then this year it's in Washington. And there it's really something that started with 1,000 people all the way to 5,000. This year they're expecting 5,000 to 10,000. And there we get most of the thought leadership, which is really industry moving every year. So almost like a new standard is set every year at the Voice Summit. There's the Voice 2 community. So if you search Voice 2, so literally the number 2 on Google, you'll see there is a community there. If you want to go on the website, it's voice2.io. And there's a Voice First community, which meet up globally, whether it's online, WhatsApp, or in person. And here you've got everyone from the likes of Amazon, Google, all types of agencies, all different types of brands who are flirting with voice, or they've already married voice into their projects. And that's a really good resource. And there's Women in Voice, which is an absolutely fantastic organization set up by a good friend of mine, Joan, in the voice industry. And yeah, it's called Women in Voice. And they're doing fantastic work in getting female representation in the conversational AI space. And it's all out there. So voice2.io, The Voice Summit by Modev, M-O-D-E-V, and Women in Voice is also another fantastic resource. And obviously my LinkedIn is a fantastic resource because I try to share as much as I possibly can from others onto my LinkedIn page.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about your work personally. Where can people find it? And tell us a bit more about your awesome new course that can get people up to speed in this industry.
Yes. So I'm available on LinkedIn. I'm available on Instagram, Sina Kahen, S-I-N-A-K-A-H-E-N. I try to post articles on the stuff that I'm doing in medtech, which is more to do with surgical robotics, but also a lot of the things I do in conversational AI. But the voice course, which we made a website for, thevoicecourse.co, that's really something that came out of years of sitting with brands and consulting agencies and seeing the questions that they have in trying to convince companies to adopt a voice project. So we saw a lot of the courses or the material or the conversations that were being had in public were about designing and developing voice experiences. But there were not a lot of material on the strategic level of why do you even want voice in the first place? How do you come up with a use case for voice? How can you augment or improve your digital experiences currently with a voice element or a voice feature? These are the questions that there weren't really answers for, and companies were spending a lot of money trying to get people to come in to answer these questions. So myself and a colleague of mine, Adi Mazor-Kario, she's a Google Assistant expert out in Israel, and we recorded this course. It's on Udemy, and we released it in November, and it's essentially a strategic view of voice and really trying to figure out what are the principles of voice design. So the people who are in UX, people who are in UX strategy, you know, marketing, digital transformation, innovation, they're able to take this course and really have a firm footing in the industry so they can start their projects. And from there are, you know, more detailed conversational design courses that we recommend. It's something that we thought we would get 100 students in a year, but in 6 months, we've almost achieved 200 people. So our students are from all industries, and it's a very exciting thing to see how voice is really being adopted by so many different people from so many different countries and so many different industries. So I hope everyone can join us.
You have a promo code for our listeners, and we'll include that in show notes. What is that?
Yes, so we named it, the promo code is UI Breakfast to represent the great work that you guys are doing. So yeah, if you go on thevoicecourse.co, or if you go on Udemy and search for The Voice Course, you just have to put in the coupon code UI Breakfast and you'll get 30% off up until the end of the month. So we really hope to see more people joining the industry.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for giving us the overview of this amazing ecosystem. And I hope it sparks some curiosity in some of our listeners. And I wish you good luck in growing your course and your audience.
Thank you very much. Thanks for all your important work in the space, and thanks for having me.
Awesome. Have a wonderful rest of your week. And here's another product featured in our Help Founders section. Iteratively is a platform for analytics collaboration. Now you can ship accurate analytics faster by involving all the stakeholders. It works on top of your existing analytics platform like Mixpanel, Segment, or Google Analytics. Head over to iterative.ly to learn more. If you'd like your product to be featured for free on multiple awesome shows, welcome to apply at helpfounders.com.